Coming from the backwoods of New Jersey, welcome to the Jersey Guys Music Podcast, where we feature in-depth music discussions and interviews with special guests from the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and AOR music. So settle in and crank it up. Now, here are your hosts, the Jersey Guys themselves, Tom and Mark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jersey Guys podcast. I'm Mark Ballow here with my co-host, Tom Coyne. And joining us tonight is the singer and songwriter from the New Jersey band Boys Town, David Polimeni. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, nice to be here, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. You and I actually have a little bit of a history. When the Boys Town album, Angels with 30 Faces, was released on CD back in 2005, I did a review of the CD for a website I was working for at the time, and then ended up following that up with an interview with you. At the time, this is way before Zoom and everything like that. So it was really just an email interview. I sent you like 15, 20 questions and you answered them and stuff like that. So, it's good to be talking to you kind of face to face today and, you know, getting to get interaction back and forth.
Oh yeah. And thank you for that, because that really launched the album online. I mean, it was a whole new world. Who knew that album would take off, you know, so many years after it was recorded? It was it just caught fire after your interview. I mean,
yeah, thank
you. Over. We were just standing back going, wow, kind of like this internet.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I'm a Jersey guy my whole life, and I'm in my mid-50s. I'm 54. So I grew up kind of in that later 80s period, and I was into sort of the hard rock and metal scene, so I was going to places like Studio One in Newark and you know, Tom's old haunt there, Lemoore in Brooklyn. So I was seeing more of the hair bands and stuff like that, and for whatever reason, Boys Town always remained a mystery to me, because I don't remember you guys at that time on the scene. So I wanted to kind of go back, and Tom and I were just talking about this before we started. When was the album that came out, Angels with 30 Faces, was released on CD in 2005, but give us a little background when that was recorded and everything. And I know Tom wants to follow that up.
Sure. So that version of Boys Town got together in like 1987, and we started to rehearse, and we were a North Jersey band, and we had a bar. It was a after-hours bar called the Orchard Grove, and it was in North Bergen, New Jersey. And that was where we kind of woodshed and cut our teeth and became a band. And because it was kind of open all night, we would just play to 400 or 500 people a night, you know, and we had our following happening in a concentrated area. And then we used to, you know, we would play the Dirt Club.
Oh, wow. Bloomfield.
Yeah. Then we had so many fans in North Jersey that we actually almost sold out the Beacon Theater, and we played there with Alan Childs, who was in Billy Squire's band. And I think even Tommy Shaw was on the bill. And we brought so many people from New Jersey. That got us the management at the China Club, which was right next door to the Beacon. And from there, we played in New York City a lot, and their China Clubs in LA. So we didn't really do the classic. We weren't heavy enough for the metal clubs.
Yeah.
So we stayed in the rock clubs in the city, and then we would, you know, just tour across the United States and play the rock clubs in Tennessee and Texas and out in Los Angeles, Madam Wong's, and and that was kind of where we had our following, because the China Club was in L.A. and New York,
right?
And we went out there and opened the China Club as we were the band there, and that kind of blew us up in that area. So we were fortunate to bounce back and forth on both coasts. But that record was kind of bifurcated. So the majority of the record was produced by David Prater in New Jersey, in Corona, New Jersey. And then we went to LA, and two of the tracks we recorded out there, Angels with Dirty Faces and Oil and Water, were done by Aaron Zygmunt. And then that became the full record years later. So those were actually our demos we were shopping around to the record company. Uh-huh. But they were done so well that they lasted, you know, a couple of decades until the internet came around, and then boom.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I think we sold 50 to 75,000 records in just, I just remember shipping them out all over the world with CD Baby. It was just a wonderful surprise, you know, thinking all those years later, you know, people would have, you know, grabbed this record. And then most of the AOR community are audiophiles, so they love the sound. And they just kind of brought us into that journey far in a world. And I think that's where we sit right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, was your sound a little bit more steeped in the early 80s New Jersey? Because when Mark first turned me on to the record way back, like almost 20 years ago, that's what I heard. Are you familiar with the Shadow Page Band at all from New Jersey?
No.
Okay, that was another band from that. And actually, I was instrumental in getting their record that was on an independent label put out on CD recently. They had that sound, a little bit of Springsteen in it, and the vocals. It had a very signature, almost rootsy, but AOR slickness to it, which is like very hard to describe. There were like a certain amount of Jersey bands that had that sound, 83, 84, 85. Were you guys more steeped in that sound, and it kind of carried more into the hair band era?
Yeah, well, I was totally, you know, I come from 70s folk influences. You know, my thing was writing songs on acoustic guitar, started with Jim Croce, who is my number one guy. And then I became a Springsteen fanatic. And my thinking was, hey, this is what these songs will sound like when I get this band. You know, it'll be like a Tom Petty, and we'll go for that organic sound. And then because of the era, you know, we were kind of at the end of the lover boy journey, Survivor, moving into hair band world, but we were definitely not the hair band sound. So we had all those elements. You know, I as much as I loved the singer-songwriters, you know, I grew up in the 70s with Foreigner, Kansas, Styx, Boston. So it is a weird marriage of those two towns.
See, that's what I hear. Is
no, you're right.
Yeah.
And I could go either way, you know, like if I have a box of songs that they're not Boys Town songs. They're more of that thing. And if I recorded it, it would go in that direction, you know. But yeah, you nailed it. That's who I am, you know. There's no question I could sit right in the pocket of that style of music, Southside Johnny and all those horns, and be extremely comfortable writing and singing in those types of bands.
Now, do you think that weird combination held you guys back as the record was coming? Were you not like hair band enough to get signed, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was you know, back then when that record companies would shift styles, everyone would get flushed down the bowl, right? So years later, you know, I always tried to figure it out. Like, why did we get a record deal in England and not in the United States? And then I realized back then, England was always behind America. Like,
that's right.
Things would happen thereafter, right? So Boys Town missed their time. The sound we had in 1989 should have been 1985.
That's what I said. Before we went on the edits, exactly what I said to him.
And that's the interesting part, because when the internet came along and sucked in the record, there was no time. Like, the people all over the world that buy the record and stream it are those fans from 1985. Yeah. Right?
Right.
So
us.
Right.
Yeah, you guys. So I'll see things where, like, they put me in, like, hey, here's the really good AOR singers. And it'll be those guys, the Foreigner, the Jimmy Jameson, Boys Town's in there. So, yeah, so we missed the big push because I looked more like the guys in that band than the hair bands. You know, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but they look like one band, right? You could,
yeah,
you could just pick guitar players, move them around, right? Yeah. So I really feel that, you know, I image-wise and vocal style-wise and writing-wise, yeah, we missed it by a couple of years, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was, Tom and I were talking before we started recording, and it was funny because we're throwing bands at each other, and we're like, you know, because like what you just said, the album was recorded or thereabouts 89-ish period, and Tom's like, there's no way that sounded like it came from that period. And he's like, it's definitely 85-ish, 86-ish sounding. So
84 even.
Yeah, the way you just explained it is great. But we were talking about bands like the Michael Stanley Band. I don't know if you're familiar.
Big fan of Michael Stanley.
Okay.
Huge. Maybe like the five guys in New Jersey who love Michael Stanley. That was a big. That North Coast album, when I got that in the early 80s.
Great album.
I devoured it, and I'm like, how do that? I was like, Michael, nobody knew who he was.
It's funny that you said that, because when we went on the air, I said to Mark that that's one of the bands that kind of your sound reminded me of. I had no idea that you would.
That's a big compliment. Yeah. I was really influenced by the You Can't Fight Fashion, that Michael Stanley record. Mm-hmm. And if you hear that record and then you listen to the Boys Town record, like, you can hear him in that. You can hear him in that record. So I love Michael Stanley. He definitely had that Jersey.
Without a doubt, for a guy that didn't come anywhere near living in New Jersey, he had that total sound. Yeah.
100%. No, Michael Stanley was, I was a huge fan of Greg Raleigh in the band. I thought, you know,
Kevin Raleigh.
Sorry, Kevin Raleigh. Amazing, you know.
And that's what set them apart, because one guy had a very Springsteen type of voice and the other guy had like a very, you know, AOR, almost hairband type of sound to his singing.
Correct. He had a song, Someone Like You.
Yeah. Beautiful. Oh, yeah. It's a great song.
Yeah. So I remember going to the Ritz to see Michael Stanley. There was like 12 people there.
Yeah, no, he never, that's a funny, you know, back then rock was still very regional in a lot of places. Bands would sell out arenas, move out of that territory, and 20 people would show up. I used to go to a lot of shows in the city, and I saw it for myself, bands that were hot on the West Coast that East Coast people didn't know. And like you just said, then you go and there's 25 people there.
Yeah. And he was that, right? So he was like holding records in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Huge. Just and play arenas. Like,
you go an hour away and, you know, crickets. You know,
it's like rock was very regional in the 80s for a lot of bands.
Yeah. And that was a good thing, because, you know, you could build that following and track that label.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of successful bands that kept major label deals that were regional acts, like Shooting Star, Michael Stanley Band.
Right. Well, we had this weird situation where we got on this compilation album. I don't know, I forget what it was called at the time, Best Unsigned Band Contest or something. And an English label heard us. They heard Way of the World. And they put Way of the World. They brought us, they signed us to go and break that song in the UK. So we went over there. We did like 10 shows. And, you know, I really felt it. Like we were doing radio interviews. The crowds were getting bigger. And then at the end of the tour, it was at the Hippodrome in London. And the place was packed. People knew the words to the single. And I was like, I guess this is how they do it. You know, like if you have that team pushing behind you and you show up and you do the job, you know, singing and being great immediately, right? You can build. But, you know, that was the only time we had record company support. And then when we came back to America, everything got wiped out with Kurt Cobain just destroyed the hair bands. It was just dropping. And that was just a weird time, you know. So God bless the internet that brought us back to life and put us back in the studio. And, you know, I checked the other day. I think The Way You Touch, something The Way You Touch has got like 80,000 streams, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, think about it, right? So no major push. People just finding this. And I think that's even more gratifying, right? That it's just people finding the music and streaming the shit out of it. And that's how you know it's good.
Yeah. Right? Well, we'll talk about, you mentioned the UK label that was AIR Records or
right.
American Import AIR. Records. Was the album, there was nothing ever released, right? Other than a single?
Just a single. We were scheduled to go back to release the full record. And then the record company they ran out of cash or something. Just one of those stories, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, heard it a million times from bands.
Yeah. Yeah. And at that, you know, it was bizarre because we played in New York and our name, like I named the band after the orphanage in Omaha, Nebraska. You know, I used to watch old movies with my father and, I said, oh, that's kind of a cool name for a rock band, you know, because I had that name since like 1980. So the orphanage saw us in the China Club and they said, you want to come and play in Nebraska? Like, absolutely. So you talk about regional. When we got to that place, we were like the Beatles. I mean, kids were out of their minds, you know, in the hotel. Insane, right? So coupled with that, we had two songs on the biggest show in the world, 21 Jump Street, Get Up and I Need Shelter, right? Wow. So we have this momentum, you know, we play for our namesake Boys Town. They put us on we did a commercial for the Hotline, right? Wow. Boys Town USA. So we had like, we were rolling. We had this thing happening in England, but you know, it's like you said, you know, if you're a hula and they're selling Frisbees, it doesn't matter what's going on. Right. It was Guns N' Roses. And I didn't look like any of those singers, you know?
Well, what made you, I mean, obviously we know we've heard that's a story from a lot of bands in that period when, you know, the grunge thing or the Seattle thing hit, it decimated everything. Obviously that was similar to what happened with you because it was at that period, but what made you in 2005 decide to say, hey, let's get these songs out. Let's release this thing. We'll call it Angels with Dirty Faces and we'll put it on CD. And at what point, 10, 15 years later that you just said, hey, let's do this.
You know, I always believed that, you know, I really just said, you know, well, we played so many gigs. There's got to be a few fans out there that want to hear the music, you know. And I used to get, you know, people looking me up on sending me an email, or are you that guy that was in that band, you know, like that classic story. And I said, what the hell, you know, I'll put up 10 records on CD Baby and we'll see what happens. And,
yeah.
And that's what happened. And then, you know, 50,000 CDs later, you know, I'm shipping them all over, like really like spending a lot of time going to the post office. You know? It was great.
You know? Yeah. Well, I was one of the big guys. I touted, and Tom knows that. I mean, I've been touting that album since it came out, and he loves it too. But I mean, I think I'm just over the top with it, you know?
I appreciate that. You really were a pioneer at lighting up those reviews, because I think it was your review and Melodic Rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Australia.
Yeah, they did a good review too. Like, it was almost like, I was like, wow, you're really talking about our bands? You know, it was so wonderful. And that just, you know, you guys established our fan base in this world that nobody ever knew existed of audiophiles that dig this sound. And it's wonderful to know that all that work you did is now being appreciated. You know, we get all the readouts, you know, we stream in South America and Germany and Sweden, I think, the most. Mm. You know, it's funny to see all the songs that they pull and they like, you know, different styles.
Well, it's funny because one of our biggest, and Tom and I have talked about this, we look at our analytics and, you know, where are people listening to us? We're these two guys sitting here in Freehold, New Jersey, you know? And one of our biggest bases is the UK, amazingly enough, you know? And it's funny. So it's like you wonder how, you know, you do cover certain type of music and where certain people pick up on it.
It's true. And we live in such a flat world now that you can be in everybody's room and backyard, you know, Zoom, this amazing thing called Zoom.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the beauty of it is if the art is good and nobody's standing in the way of the distribution of it, people will find good stuff, no matter how old it is.
Yeah.
Long as it's good, you know, you can't make somebody stream your songs thousands of times.
Right.
Something has to be, you know, working. Yeah. So we got excited and the last 2 years, you know, put out a couple of more songs and, you know, they got sucked right into the fan base. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, let's jump ahead because, you know, there was the one and only album, 2005, Angels with Dirty Faces. Let's fast forward to 2020, because right. You and I was super excited. I remember this like it was yesterday. You announced the show, a reunion of Boys Town, to be played in New Jersey here. And I was so looking forward to that. And then, of course, you know, the pandemic hits, the world shuts down. That show never happens. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because at the time when you announced that reunion show in 2020, you at that point were going to have two newer members in the band at the time. And I believe it was going to be Charlie Calf, who now plays with Angel, but previously a band called Shotgun Symphony from New Jersey. Right. I have a personal friendship with Charlie for about 10, 12 years now. And you're going to have John Hummel, great drummer. Right. Playing in the band at the time. I mean, obviously that all never happened because of the pandemic, but fast forward a couple of years later, 2023, you guys finally get to do that reunion show. Talk a little bit about, you know, why you felt 2020 and then again in 2023 was the right time to do something again with Boys Town.
Yeah. Cause you know, we were so excited to put the show together and it was such a drag, you know, the whole COVID thing, that we kept it alive. And although you know, I think Charlie wasn't available, when I circled back to put the band together, you know, because the two original members were Joey Sykes and John Tito. Mm-hmm. And we started talking about it, and Joey knew, you know, he was the guy who got us to Hummel.
Okay.
And we talked about a show, one show, right? We were just going to do one big show. And the response to it was really, really more than we thought. And there was like a giant storm the night of that show too, which like half the people couldn't get there because the whole New Jersey was flooded. I forget, it might've been a hurricane or something. But it just, we got together, you know, because the whole thing was, guys, you know, this works if I can still sing, you know what I mean? So I was singing and working out and trying to get my voice back into doing the set. And then, you know, we did the set, and it was the first time I had done an hour show in 20 years, yeah. You know? So I got through it. It wasn't where I needed it to be yet. But shortly after, it didn't take too long before we put it all together. And Johnny Tito, he's kind of like the musical director of Boys Town.
Okay.
He put the other guys together in the band, and boom, it just came together. And, you know, we did the show, and I think we did two shows.
Right. I was at both. Yes. And I have to thank you for, I kind of got in your ear and was begging you to play Jackie. and you finally pulled that out in the second show. So thank you for that.
Oh yeah. That's, that song is probably the oldest song in
really?
The set. I wrote that in 1981.
Wow.
And recorded it in 82. So that was four track recording that wow. you hear.
Well, that was after you put out the Angels with Dirty Faces CD. You actually, and we talk about the whole internet and streaming thing, you did release a few digital type albums, which was Orphans and the Grove Street, or Grove, what is it?
Orchard Grove Years.
Orchard Grove Years, correct, yes.
Yeah.
You put them out, and that had a bunch of demos, live songs, and stuff like that, and that's where the song Jackie comes from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I wanted to get some of the stuff out that, because I felt like there were so many people in lineups in Boys Town, you know, I wanted to, you know, kind of thank them for the time they spent in the band and just release the stuff that they recorded on and the years led up to the Angels album that most of them weren't on. But, you know, I wouldn't have got there without them and their time and writing those beginning songs. So kind of the backstory of how the sound was moving, you know,
yeah,
into a real producer like David Prater, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, David Prater, everybody, if they know and are listening out there, I mean, he produced Firehouse, Dream Theater. So yeah. Here's a guy that has pretty good history of bands, you know?
Yeah. He really put that sound together with us, and he's one of those producers that has his sound. Mm-hmm. You know? So we kind of stepped into it, added our little thing. But when I listen to those other bands, you can hear Prater in there.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, let's go. You talked about bleeding a couple songs, new songs out over the last few years. 2023 saw two new digital singles released. 2024 this year saw two more. Is that something that you guys are going to continue to do, or are you maybe thinking about going for a full blown album?
Yeah, we actually talked about that last week. You know, we were testing the waters to see, you know, how can we produce ourselves? You know, we found a wonderful studio, Surefire Recording, down by you guys in Long Branch, mm-hmm. that has all the vintage gear. So we recorded all those songs there, and it sounded, you know, like they fit in the AOR world.
Oh yeah.
And just last week, you know, I said, you know what, guys, I'm gonna give you a bunch of songs that I've had in a shoebox. And let's see if we have an album here. You know, I wrote a couple of new ones because it's getting very inspiring, you know, playing with the guys again and seeing the response to Bridges Back, you know, and, you know, In the Shadowlands we just released, which, you know, we were with that little short film. Mm-hmm. Just we're just trying to figure out what is the direction of a new record, you know, because a lot of the guys have that 70s influence in their playing, you know, like the Humble Pie, the Zeppelin, you know, the acoustic guitars, you know, tunings, you know, do we make the album the way we want to make it, or do we feed the AOR community, you know, because they like a certain sound.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure that out, you know, like Bridges Back fits, Lights Go Out fits, right?
Great song. Yeah.
Thank you. Shadowlands gets a little more Bad Company, you know what I mean? Like rocking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of part of it. So, you know, without overthinking it, we're just going to see which songs we think are really on the highest level, and whatever they need musically, we're going to give them, and we're going to see where it goes. But we definitely are talking about a new record.
Oh, great. Full
record. Well, you know, once you become a cult underground figure in the AOR community, you either live or die by that.
That's the truth.
So I always say, if you're not looking to make money from it, one of the probably the greatest niche place to be is an underground AOR artist, because you'll always have X amount of fans that will live and die by whatever you do. But if you break the mold, you're done.
Well, that was the kind of mountain to climb, you know. Are these songs, you know, something I should just do as a solo artist, and then whatever happens with them in the marketplace, it's a departure from Boys Town. And when you go back to Boys Town, do we just keep on pounding out? You know, it's something that we actually had many conversations, because
I bet
you can see what they love, and you know, it's like the country music audience, they never get tired of hearing about their country life and those songs. The AOR community loves that sound. They love love those packed vocals and those anthems. And I love that too. So it's something we're right now, I think we're still in the right direction. But we'll see, you know. We'll see. Okay. I got plenty of songs.
It's walking a tightrope with the AOR community.
Yeah.
Always yeah. was. I've been part of it since its inception. It's always been, you know, and I'm guilty of it too. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, like you probably were too. So I have a very wide open taste. But when it comes to established AOR acts that you have an album or two where, you know, that sound is what you like, you don't want deviation from it.
Yeah. That's why Bridges Back came out of the box as a single, and they just grabbed that because it has that sound.
Right.
You know, where in the Shadowlands is moving in it. There's a different countries are listening. That's what's bizarre about it. Like the countries that listen to the Boys Town stuff took Bridges Back and just said, okay, this is fits right in. Shadowlands was a bit of a deviation, but it found its own place, you know, in these other countries, you know. So it's hard to figure it out sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to dress the song in the wrong clothes either.
Yeah,
you
know? Right.
My writing moves.
No, you have to stay true to what, I mean, your feelings are too, and not just totally write for other people, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll figure it out. I mean, I still think it should be separate, but I do respect the band's opinions. So we're fighting it out right now. You know?
well, in the meantime, you got a show on November 16th. Back again at the Debonair Music Hall in Teaneck, New Jersey. Right. Talk about that coming up.
Yeah, we've got two new members of the band. Joey Sykes moved to Nashville, right? So we have a new bass player named Roy DeJesus, fantastic. And we have a percussion player now, background vocalist, is kind of like all-purpose guy, you know, Frank Lepora. And these are Long Island guys. And they were in bands like Equinox and a lot of big cover bands out in Pilot. Those were John Tito's buddies coming up in the cover band scene. So he found them. And, you know, we are just enforcing some of the rhythms on the drums. We open up part of the show with, like in the song Get Up, we've got like a big drum, just getting like a little progressive with the live show, you know? Mm. So, you know, we're trying to bring a different show to the people that are coming back to Debonair.
Okay.
They'll have a few new things, a couple of new songs.
You know? Cool. I'll be there for the third show, third time.
Yeah, so. Man. Fantastic.
There's one song I always wanted to ask you about. It was from I'm not sure which one of the digital releases you put out, but the song Kingdom of the Blind.
Hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that song, because I just love that song, and it's so different, I think, from anything that when you think of the Boys Town sound.
Yeah, well, that's because I wrote it for a movie.
Ah.
And it was the end title to a movie from 1993 called Kingdom of the Blind that had William Peterson before he was on CSI.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that song is about that movie.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I love that lyric, you know, the kingdom of the blind, you know, with the man with one eye is king, you know. It's like, I just love that, the way that lyric goes, you know.
Oh, William Peterson was in To Live and Die in L.A.
That's right.
Love that movie. It's, yeah, okay.
Oh, killer. Yeah, I think this was after that. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk about, you know, we've talked about Boys Town, the old stuff, the new stuff, the show coming up on November 16th. But let's talk about something else you've done in your day job, so to speak, your career. You became vice president of film and music publishing at BMG.
Yeah, yeah. I have I always wanted to stay around the song, and music publishing was just the place to be with all these fantastic songwriters. So, you know, with my experience writing for film and having songs in film, it was a natural place for me to, you know, find a job. So I've been with BMG probably about eight, 9 years now. I was a consultant in the beginning, and now I work with just the film community, you know, showing them how to own their music in their movies, you know, preferably the underscore, the orchestrations in the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
It's really, it's a great way to keep inside the business, and while you're making music, you're still right. In the industry, you know what's going on. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I was telling Tom, I read that one of the things you did was you were instrumental in acquiring the rights of the estate of Foghat and David Peverett and the music of Foghat. So I know Tom, I mentioned he was like, his ears, you know, is perked up when I said that to him before we went on. Did you have something you wanted to ask?
I did. Foghat Live, the second half of that album. Would that ever be released?
That I could find out for you. But I just, I was, you know, the other side of my brain is business, you know? So I was just involved in the deal of the estate wanted to sell their music because I think Dave had passed away and it was the children. They wanted to make sure that it was in the right hands. So their road manager introduced them to me, and then I made the deal with Bicycle Music, and that kind of got me started in music publishing. You know, before that, you know, I was just singing television commercials to make a living. And jingles.
Because the story with that record was it was supposed to be a double album. And the record company at the last minute cheaped out on it and wanted to put it out as a single. And the other half of that live album is sitting in the can. And I know there's been a Rock Candy try to get the rights to it. There's been a lot of labels that try to get the rights to it, but it's never happened.
Yeah. Well, that would probably be Bicycle Music now turned to Concord Music. So I think Concord Records would be the owners of those songs.
That's maybe, what I suspected, yeah.
Which, you know, you get into that corporate.
No, I know. They want crazy money to release something that's at this time is not going to sell all that much.
Yeah, but the fans would love it.
It's one of the greatest live albums ever, in my opinion, like a top five live album. And to know that half of it's in the can and never been released has always been fun. And I didn't even know that until Rock Candy wrote about it about 10 years ago in one of their magazines. They interviewed Roger Earle. And right. He tried to get, he was one of the original members. He tried to get the rights to it, and he couldn't.
I got to make some inquiries, see if I can find something out.
Yeah, I'd love to know what's holding it. I mean, unless they're asking like a crazy amount of money that nobody wants to put up for. And
Could be a lot of, and I'm just, speculating, but it could be a lot of record label claiming, hey, they were recording artists under our label.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
That'll stop things for sure.
Yeah. So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about before, as we're kind of closing things or wrapping things up here, I did want to ask you too, and we talked about the music publishing thing and involved in that, you also kind of do a like production thing within the industry. You've been responsible for producing like a Frank Stallone documentary that came out in 2021.
What happened was the last 5 years, being around all the filmmakers, I wanted to get into producing films. I watched how it was being done and packaged, and I said, I think I could do this. So, I started with an independent film called Locating Silver Lake, and I raised the capital to produce that film. And that was my first experience in the film business. And I believe that's on Amazon Prime or one of those platforms now. After that, I produced two documentaries for the Stallone family. One was 40 Years of Rocky, The Birth of a Classic, which is a half an hour documentary with Sylvester Stallone about the making of the movie. And then we did an hour documentary on his brother, Frank, and what his career was like being in the shadow of an icon. I produced those films and I enjoyed it. And I have a production company, and right now we have about five projects in development. And when I'm not writing songs, I'm writing screenplays. And right now, one of those screenplays is moving into pre-production, making offers to actors. Oh, wow. So I'm really, getting deeper into the film business in my later years here. Helps the music,
Right.
And Frank Stallone did have an AOR album out in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah, he's a great singer. I have to say, I work with him a lot. I never heard him sing a flat note. He's just a really professional singer. He's got a couple of big band records. I mean, he can do anything. The AOR was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Great record. And he does Sinatra stuff and Bobby Darin stuff.
That's what I've heard, too, yeah.
Just as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're both fans of that, the AOR album he put out. So
it was like 85, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great songs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh, yes. Darla. Right.
Yeah. He's a dear friend of mine. I love him.
That's great. It's good stuff. Well, David, hey, thank you for the conversation tonight. We really appreciate catching up. Again, November 16th, Boys Town. If you're in the New Jersey area, Northern New Jersey, Debonair Music Hall, Teaneck, New Jersey. Band's playing again.
That's it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you both very
much.
Thanks
very much, David. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate it, David. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Good luck to you, Yankees.
Yeah.
I'm going to check now.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Time can be a long and lonely ride. Tonight I feel